I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. We continue meeting the candidates in Vancouver Kensington with the election under a week away, Tuesday the 14th of May. Joining me now to chat is the BC Green Party candidate, Chris Fiel. The riding's northern borders are 16th to Fraser and Kingsway to Nanaimo. Its eastern border is Nanaimo to 49th Avenue, 49th Avenue south to Main, and up Main from 49th to 16th Avenue. This is the third election campaign that all of the candidates running have been invited to appear. Last week I spoke to the BC Liberal and BC NDP candidates, and I'm still waiting to hear back from the BC Conservative Party candidate. Chris Fiel is a scientist with a clinical research group at the University of British Columbia. He was born in Edmonton but raised in British Columbia. He trained in engineering and physics and has worked in the pulp and paper industry. He has completed a doctorate in experimental medicine. I'll ask him about why he's running, his party's chances in this riding and elsewhere, as well as the issues that constituents confront him with as he campaigns throughout the riding. The website for the Green Party of BC is at greenparty.bc.ca. On Facebook, see facebook.com/VancouverKensington, Vancouver Kensington being one word. And on Twitter, the handle is Chris_Fiel. Please welcome to the Plant on Lead program in studio today, Chris Fiel. Dr. Fiel, good morning.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
Thanks for coming in to do this. I appreciate it. I understand yesterday there was an event at McBride Elementary.
Yes, yeah.
And that's the first time that all four of you have come together, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Does it surprise you that there hasn't been a debate or an appearance with all four of you to talk about the issues in this campaign?
Yeah, it is quite surprising. I've been working with the candidate for False Creek, Daniel Tsege, and ridings up there seem to have a lot of different events going on, organized by residents' associations and things like that, whereas there just doesn't seem to be much happening in Kensington. Yeah. Surprising.
And traveling the riding as you have, talking to people, door-knocking and the sort, as I'm sure you've been doing in the last couple of weeks, what's the response you've been getting about the Green Party, your leader, and sort of the issues in the campaign?
I think people have been quite positive. I think I get the sense that people are quite tired of the two-party system that we've got going in BC. You know, they'll support the Liberals or they'll support the NDP more of as a strategic decision rather than voting for somebody. It seems like a lot of voters are looking to vote for somebody, and so I think the Green Party is a nice choice. But we'll see what happens on election day, whether we can get out of the strategic voting
And mode. Your party has done well. I mean, in the last federal election, you won a seat, Elizabeth May's seat on the island. It seems to me that your party is getting recognized, or it's getting heard. And I think I know there's at least a couple of seats in this province that are in play that your party could win. I mean, these are objective accounts and polls that I've seen that suggest that. Right. What do you think's happened in terms of how the Green Party is viewed? Because, I mean, there are a lot of people over the years who've thought that your party is just a party of one issue.
Right.
I mean, it's there in your name. You'd think that that's, you know, what you guys are all about.
I think once people get to see more of the policies and the extensive work that's gone into thinking through a large range of issues, they realize that the Green Party is about much more than just the environment. A funny story, I was trying to get signatures. You need 100 signatures to get on the ballot. And passed this guy in a business suit, and he said, I'd never vote for a tree hugger, but I'll sign your form because maybe you'll split the vote with the NDP.
Yeah.
I can kind of see where the Green Party I would view as like a progressive party. There's a lot that they would want to change. But on the other hand, I would say that the Green Party is actually more fiscally conservative than many of the other parties, because fiscal sustainability is a big issue. That might resonate with voters. I don't know if you follow there was an Abacus poll out a while ago. They had it broken down into who did you vote for in 2009 and who are you planning to vote for this time. And by far, the highest fraction were people who voted for the BC Conservatives in 2009 would vote for the Green Party.
Yeah.
Whether that's just they're changing the protest vote, I don't know. But it's an interesting
And so when they talk about a vote split, it's usually between your party and the NDP. In terms of their policies on the environment, and I'm sure you've looked at their platform and you've heard their candidates and what they think about fracking and the pipeline and all these things that seem to dominate the news, or that we've been hearing about. Where are they wrong on the environment, and what separates the two of you? Because, I mean, there is a difference, right?
Yeah, there's definitely a difference. The Green Party's not in favor of continued natural gas development and export. I think that's been made clear that there would be a moratorium on new leases for fracking, unconventional natural gas. Whereas the NDP seems to... it's hard to tell where they actually stand, and this is one of the most frustrating things when you try to figure out what the environmental policy of the NDP is, because I think that was Earth Day that mm-hmm. Adrian Dix came out and said they were against Kinder Morgan, you know, doubling their capacity because, you know, we don't want oil tankers in Port of Vancouver. But then the next day there was an article in one of the smaller papers from the candidate saying, well, we're all in favor of moving the port. Well, that's not the point. The point is that at this point in our history, the fossil fuels need to stay in the ground, and we need to prevent tanker traffic off our coast. It's just too risky for our other important industries.
What do you make of the NDP's position on the carbon tax? And on the last campaign, they were opposed to it. They said that if they would form the government, they would eliminate it. Where are they now? I think they want to increase the tax, don't they?
Yeah, actually, I don't remember exactly whether they'd increase it or keep it the way it is, but this is...
They've sort of embraced it, haven't they?
Yeah, they've embraced it, but the problem for me with the NDP is that they seem to change maybe as they view opinion polls.
Yeah.
Like you say, 4 years ago, they were totally against it and they were going to axe it. What's changed in 4 years? Many of the people are still there. Are they going to get rid of it next election, or decide midterm that they need to, you know, for some economic reason that they want to cut it? I don't know.
Your campaign talks about a sustainable, equitable prosperity.
Right.
And if you listen to the Liberal Party and the Premier, she suggests that prosperity can happen with LNG. And so there's a difference there between your party and hers.
Right. LNG for export is just adding to the fossil fuels that are burnt. It's not displacing burning of coal. And there's some controversy even now among people who actually measure the greenhouse gas emissions from fracking, the so-called fugitive gas. I mean, you drill a hole in the ground, you break up the rocks underneath. A lot of the natural gas escapes, and most of it is methane. And methane is a much stronger greenhouse gas than even carbon dioxide. There's debate whether switching from coal to natural gas is even better. So I think what we need to do is move to other industries that give people better jobs, and by withdrawing this from the market, even if it's temporarily, we would give a strong incentive to the people who would buy our gas to switch to something more responsible, whether it's renewables or talking Japan into restarting their nuclear reactors. I mean, that would be mm-hmm. I'm fairly strongly in favor at this point in nuclear technology.
What's another industry that both parties, the NDP or the Liberals, whoever forms the government after next Tuesday, could encourage, say, so that we could have more sustainable businesses and grow our economy that way rather than these ways that both the NDP and the Liberals are in favor of?
I remember some new measures on the effectiveness of wind power, and wind power would be almost a perfect fit with BC. We've got existing hydro electricity power for base load, and then when the water gets drawn down, it's windier. So we could replace We could put the Site C dam on the back burner, not develop that, take similar amount of resources and put it into wind power, and we could generate wind power essentially cheaper than water or coal. The technology's developed that well, and we could export this power. We could become another major electrical exporting region, as well as, we really have to think about it very soon, switching away our automobile fleet from gasoline and electric or hydrogen. I mean, hydrogen is just a fancy battery, so you'd get your hydrogen from electricity. That would be a perfect way to give some stimulus to the BC economy, get some local industry based around new technologies, supporting the wind energy. So it would win in all respects, I think, in BC.
The Premier says it'll be $100 billion that you'll get from LNG. Will you get $100 billion from these industries that you've just said?
Oh, I think definitely. Yeah. The other thing is I don't believe that figure at all. The experience in the U.S. is that the amount of gas that's recoverable by fracking is vastly overstated. Factor of 8 is what one analyst for the investment community came up with. So, you know, in the U.S. they say, well, we've got 99 or 100 years worth of natural gas. He figures it's more like 12 or 13. And you know, this is over 30 years or whatever the lifetime of the LNG project is. So 30 years, $100 million, it's still only a few billion dollars a year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's smaller than the deficits we've been running.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be a game changer even if we did it.
Well, looking just beyond the current campaign that we're in, because we hear a lot about fracking. If you're on Facebook or on Twitter, you see those little animation things or photographs that people post and things. Do you think that where do you think people are in terms of fracking? I mean, we've seen movies even made on it, and the sort.
I think that it's there's enough dangers to the local area in terms of groundwater contamination or you know, as you say, people getting methane leaking into their well water, they can light their water on fire. I think that it's something that should just be put on hold. The funniest thing about the push to develop natural gas is, like, what's the rush? I mean, this stuff isn't going to spoil. It's been in the ground for millions of years. We might think about just leaving it for the next generation. Figure out if fracking can be done properly based on the U.S. experience. And then maybe in 20 years, when the net price of natural gas is 10 times what it is now, it might actually make sense. People also seem to forget that the methane in natural gas is much, much more valuable as a chemical input to fertilizer production, pharmaceuticals. It's one of the base stocks of chemical industry. So it's much, much more valuable for those uses rather than fuel.
People listening to us won't be from this riding. So you've gotten to know Jane Stirk, I'm assuming, over the years. And
I actually haven't been involved with the Green Party for very long. I did meet her.
Yeah.
She
seems like a very impressive woman.
Yes, she is. And she originally trained in counseling psychology. She did a doctorate, PhD in that. But she spent most of her career actually as a small businesswoman.
Yeah.
And so she's done a lot of different things. She's got a lot of good ideas, I think.
Yeah. What compelled you to run?
It was mainly, it sounds kind of flippant, but it's really when I was thinking about my daughters. I mean, when I was 25 years ago, I was an engineering student. We were talking about climate change and the big problems and big technology change that needed to happen. You know, a few years later, Brian Mulroney was at UN Rio Summit, Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro.
Yeah.
We're going to change everything, and nothing happened. And we're at a point now that it's not a matter of, well, we'll just take it easy and, you know, gradually change. We put off change for so long that the change needs to happen now. It needs to happen in the next, we need to start changing in the next 4 years, in the next government mandate. In you know, something like 10 to 20 years, we're going to go past 450 parts per million CO2 in the atmosphere. And that's, and even that threshold looks to be too high now. We could be, there's a good chance that we're going to be in real trouble with massive unrest. You know, we're Canadians will probably still be able to eat, but I know lots of people who care about other people in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You think of the food riots that happened when corn and rice prices went through the roof. That's just a start. I mean, it could be, these are serious problems that we need to take responsibility for as producers and consumers of fossil fuels. And we need to do it now. So by putting my name in the race,
yeah,
was late, not very organized, had some family issues that has delayed me even getting signed up.
Yeah.
But at least I get to put it out as election issues.
Now you think it's you think it's dire? You think that we're in a sort of state of emergency? I've talked to a number of people over the years who've written books, like your fellow candidate in Oak Bay, I guess, Dr. Yeah. Weaver. Do you think young people are getting it, though?
No, I don't think so. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
When I went to the schools, I always asked them, have you heard of climate change? Have you heard of ocean acidification? And surprisingly, they have. So ocean acidification, the carbon dioxide dissolves in water and forms a weak acid. And so it, in 10 years, we won't have any more coral. Washington State is having problems with some of their shellfish resources because they're not forming shells. Water is becoming too acidic, even though it's on a pH scale, it's really minor. But the students are aware of that, which I find really striking. But at the same time, our political system and the way people win elections seems to be more based around sound bites. It's not, when you go knocking on doors, you've got 5 or 10 seconds to make contact. You can't get into a debate. You've got to just give them your pitch. Hopefully people will read my brochures.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, the sense of urgency has been strongly lacking in the last few decades.
You were, as we mentioned off the top, you were at an event yesterday with your opponents in this race. It was in elementary school, was it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, so did you get a lot of questions on the environment? I mean, was this some of the issues that the young people that you met yesterday were interested in?
Yeah, they were quite interested in climate change and and how serious I thought it was.
Mm-hmm. And do you think we're past the point now where that most people, and I'm thinking like 80% of the population, think that climate change is real and that it's not some hoax or anything like that?
Yeah, I really do. There was a well-funded disinformation campaign, mostly in the States, and they've been thoroughly ridiculed online now in front of Senate committees and things like that. So I think we can optimistically think that the information is going to be reasonable. And maybe, I don't think there's an overwhelming majority of people who accept that it's real, but I think the majority of people just don't give it any thought. So if we can just keep a political process where the serious people know it's a problem, move forward with that, then people will adjust.
What have you made of the campaign so far? I mean, you were with your opponents yesterday. You have the chance to travel the riding and see what people are thinking. What do you think of the people you're running against?
They've been very friendly, actually. I think, as in most Canadian politics, we agree on a lot of things. And where we disagree, haven't had any real debates. It's been more like forum style. So people have been quite friendly and supportive.
Well, when people have written about this race, as they did in the Georgia Strait, there were 3 or 4 articles on Kensington. They talked about the race issue because both the NDP and the Liberal candidates share a common heritage. Is that something that you're hearing about when you talk to voters in the constituency? I mean, if you just go by the press, that's what this race is all about.
Right. I don't really get that sense. I think Mainly the complaints that I've got that might be construed that way really involve more city issues, like, you know, somebody who's been living there for 30 years sees, you know, Asian families come in, mm-hmm. into a big house, that kind of thing that people will get annoyed about when their neighborhoods change. But for the most part, I mean, Kensington is it's got a very large number of young people as well. And I think, you know, younger people tend to be more in tune with, you know, with politics and what's going on outside of their ethnic group, you know, through schools where everybody's mixed together. So I don't see much of an impact of an ethnic mix. But
the polls currently, and I haven't checked the polls lately, you've probably seen more recently, have your party at what, 12? It's between 8-12%, I've seen, depending on the poll.
Yeah.
But on the island, it's more than that, right?
Yeah, I've heard figures on the island of over 30%,
yeah.
in some of the ridings. So, I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic that they'll win a seat or two, maybe three.
Yeah.
I don't have high hopes for Kensington for myself. But I mean, that's fine. This is my first run at public office, and it's largely a learning experience, the opportunity to raise issues with the other candidates.
Has it been fun running?
Yeah, it has been quite fun.
Yeah.
The only time that it's been aggravating is when people say they don't want to talk to you because they don't plan to vote.
Yeah, and I'm sure. I mean, it frustrates. I mean, anybody that regardless of what they vote for, or who they vote for, if you're interested in sort of public policy issues, I mean, that's the most frustrating thing to see. That I mean, I see that. I'm sure you do on Facebook, on Twitter, and the sort.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what it is. I mean, we haven't had the super negative campaigns that really turned voters off,
yeah.
like we see in the States.
Yeah.
I almost get the sense that nobody expects much to change, and things are pretty good.
Yeah.
Things are pretty good in Vancouver. And so maybe there's just not, people don't feel the need to put much of their personal time into following politics.
And if you suggest that there could be more than one seat, won by the Greens in the next election. I mean, that really could change the discourse, couldn't it? I mean, Elizabeth May, with her one seat, has sort of done that in Ottawa already, hasn't she?
Yeah, I think so. I think it could be quite different. And also, just a different perspective, like the longer-term perspective, you know, of sustainability, whether it's fiscal or environmental. I think that might be quite a different, refreshing perspective.
Chris, I appreciate you coming in to do this. It's a pleasure meeting you. Good luck with the rest of the campaign.
Great, thank you.
The websites for more, greenparty.bc.ca, facebook.com/VancouverKensington, and then on Twitter, Chris_Fiel. Chris Fiel, the Green Party of BC candidate in Vancouver Kensington, joined me in studio here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.